Welcome, friends, to Tank Tap, the podcast all about video games and beer. One of your hosts, Ben, here with Lucy.
I'm back.
Hey, and Adil.
Hello.
Hello.
It's episode 430. It's still January, so I'm still on the non-alcoholic beers. Lucy, I think you are the same.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Adil, what are you drinking this evening?
I've got... This one's just for you, Lucy.
Okay.
It's a Vault City beer.
Yeah, I picked up on that. I got that far. I'm just wondering what interesting melange of flavors.
It's 6.3%. And it is called Vault City's Iron Blue Bubblegum Brew.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Oh dear! I've seen the Iron Brew ones going around, but I didn't. They've taken it up a notch, haven't they?
Yeah. So they've got a sour scale. It's only a number 2 out of 5.
Oh.
Why chew it when you can brew it? We've dialed up the voltage of Iron Brew's iconic flavor, adding a burst of bubblegum among each sip of sour sweetness. Turn your tongue blue with this brew. As we pay homage with a Vault City variation of the nation's favorite soft drink.
In Canada, did you get the "I like to chew it"? Okay, that must have just been over
That's
here.
That's a UK thing, yeah.
Or is a dinosaur? Yeah. T-Rex.
Holy crap!
Singing, "I like chew to it. Chew it."
Yeah, I remember chew it.
Yeah.
Did they turn into opal fruits, or was that a different? Or was opal fruits turned into Starburst or something?
God knows. I don't like sweets.
Obscure sweets from the 90s changing their names. Mm. Yeah. Cool. Good. Adil's getting that poured. Lucy, I have got the Wipe Run True number 3, third time's a charm alcohol-free beer.
And it probably is third. Well, it's more than third time's a charm. It's many times a charm where we actually sync up without even...
Nice.
Knowing so. So, yeah, I've got number 3 as well.
Perfect, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get those cracked. There is a little bit of flavor text. I will read it. Third time's a charm. It's a West Coast IPA. Our delicious alcohol-free West Coast IPA brewed in collaboration with Berkshire's finest Elusive Brewing. Balanced flavors are key to this beer. Satisfying hop bitterness from classic West Coast American hops combined with a layered complex base of caramel, extra pale barley and rye malts. All but 0.5% of the alcohol is removed using market-leading de-alcoholization technology. I wonder why they leave 0.5 in. Is that, like, I don't know the science behind it, because lots of them are alcohol-free, but actually I have been drinking a 0.0% beer the last few days. So
I think 0.0 is a newer way of doing it. I think it didn't used to be able to get fully de-alcoholized.
Okay.
As far as I remember, it going to liquor stores as a teenager and someone accidentally buying like Beck's 0.5% because they just saw beer or whatever. Now I'm very curious.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's like you're punishing yourself enough. We're just going to leave you for 0.5 to feel human.
Well, I drank. I can't remember what the brand was. It was like off the shelf from the supermarket. It was like 8 cans for £5 or something like that, and it was a Dutch brewery. That's all I can tell you. I think the tin was red with maybe some blue writing, something like that, or a white cardboard sleeve. Maybe it was in Morrison's. Probably everyone can get it, but it was all right. A little bit sweet, as some of these non-alcoholic beers tend to be, but very, very drinkable. Just a few of an evening over the weekend, so yeah. And I do find it not necessarily interesting, but you know, very us that we've been doing kind of dry Jan episodes for, you know, 3 odd years, and we've got no idea about how it's made. Still, just like it is.
Well, that's just like normal beer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
it's made by leprechauns, isn't it?
Leprechauns and elves. Yeah, depends where you are.
Yeah. Go to the end of the rainbow and there's beer there, and they just tap this well underneath this one rainbow. Different beer comes out.
Yes, absolutely. Adil, why don't you regale us with your beer tastes, unless you're mid-research.
I can regale you with the research and then the beer. Apparently, it's basically the 0.5% is because alcohol was used as a solvent in preparation or because it was de-alcoholized. And so it's like the catch-all. There's alcohol in it, and so regulation-wise, they just say it 0.5%. Yeah. But then according to this, the lightdrinker.com article, so take it with a splash of ethanol.
Not alcohol.
apparently, so like anything that's fermented has some amount of alcohol, and so like vinegar, soy sauce, bananas, and apparently orange juice contains around 0.7% alcohol.
Oh, really?
Damn.
But also, 0.5% is so little that it takes the average person 16 minutes to fully process.
Wow.
Okay. So it's like impossible to get drunk off of it because you would process it too fast, let alone how much.
However, I wasn't allowed to have it. I wasn't allowed even to have alcohol-free beer. And I was told not to eat bananas either when I was on painkillers like before Christmas because they react to alcohol so violently. Right. And they're like, you can't have anything basically with any percentage of alcohol in. I'm pretty sure I had like soy sauce and stuff. So maybe it's like so low in there, but they've still got to, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Blue beer.
Blue beer. It is blue. The head, poured with a nice two fingers ahead, which as you can see is mostly gone. It on cracking, immediate, thickly sweet bubblegum nose. The sour comes out better than like, so basically the first hit of the nose is like bubblegum. So I'm like here, I'm just smelling that. But if I give it a proper nose, I'm getting a nice, really nice core of sour, slightly malty sour. And actually it over up close, it overpowers the bubblegum, or maybe that's just like evaporated.
Okay.
Minutes we're talking. Oh yes. Podcast listeners, it's a, I want to say an electric blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looked like that mash gang that I had. It's just unnatural.
Either I'm getting a little sick or my mouth is just confused. That first sip, I don't know what to make of it. Let me give you another one.
It's like no color that is ever seen in nature, apart from like in butterflies and weird fish.
Oh, that's super interesting. I get a sour, so it's a 2 out of 5. If we look at the label, you would think 5 is the biggest.
Yep.
Yes.
But I get a really nice tartness out of this, and kind of a bit of a tingling. The iron brew is coming, right? It's iron brew on top, bubblegum on top of iron brew. This now makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking just bubblegum. I'm like, where's the bubblegum? And it's like after the main taste starts to fade, you get this like very artificial bubblegummy taste. And like at the front of my mouth, I still have a bit of that tartness. But then the rest of my mouth for a spell, it just tastes like... what the hell is that? Double bubble? You ever have those? Did you have double bubble around here? These like in a pink wrapper, single serving, and it had a dumb cartoon in it, comic strip in it, and it like was hard gum and you would chew it.
Not that I remember.
I think we have something similar.
Anyway, or I guess even like, excuse me, gumballs?
Yeah.
That like very kind of artificial taste that like after you chew it for a while you're like, this tastes like not nature.
Rubber. Yeah.
Yeah. you get a peak of that, which isn't great. But it doesn't last that long. And then there's just, to be honest, the tartness is the thing that lasts the longest.
Mm.
Yeah, again, nice iron brewy. Sour on the upswing, and then as that taste fades, you get this presence of bubblegum with the tartness still there. Yeah, this is the most... So, you saw my sip. This is the worst part right now. Because all I taste is... It literally, I've coated in my mouth. And in this taste of... I've been chewing crappy, cheap bubble gum. Or gumballs or whatever. Right. And it's got a bit of... like, it's not quite acrid, but yes, that rubbery, lingering taste. And luckily, it doesn't stay that long. But... I mean, I didn't buy this because I thought I'd love it. But if you like bubblegum and Iron Brew, I don't think you'll find a better beer.
Okay.
But yeah, it's not terrible. I was expecting, to be honest, I was expecting much bigger sort of sweet hit. I guess I'm a bit disappointed that the bubblegum moment is shorter than the old bubblegum aftertaste.
Mm.
And hopefully... that might shift as my palate gets used to it. I did have a few slices of vegan pizza right before this, so my mouth is having a good day.
Yeah, vegan cheese is an affront to God, in my opinion.
It is.
It's the worst thing that man has created.
Oh, there's
and
worse.
We created the nuke. Yeah. That is the worst thing ever. I have nightmares about that one time I had vegan cheese.
How long ago was it?
About probably maybe 2 years ago.
Okay, so in the time where it's not been decent.
It's wrong. And no one wants to call me up.
It's fine. I'm not here to convert you.
Just do without.
Let's move on to our beer, Lucy. The number three. I will confess, I have had this a couple of times already over the last last couple of weeks, as I've been sort of trying to find a few different alcohol-free beers, and the selection around the corner being quite limited, being basically the four Wiper and True beers or a BrewDog four pack of, I think, a alcohol-free punk. I think they do.
So
that's been it. So I've had this a couple of times.
I went to one beer shops that's more local to me, just because I was on the road today. Mm. And there's no alcohol-free beers. There's not one.
Really?
And on one part, I like it.
Yeah.
The other part, I'm like, okay, I'll pick up a couple beers for February and beyond. That's fine.
Well, I drank a few Wiper and True beers over the last week. Mostly this number three, the number one again, and I have tried, and we'll talk about momentarily, the number two, the stout, and I did try the number four, the Radler, as well. But they also do a collaboration with Daya as well. I think it's called Tiptoes or Tiptoe, something like that, which is like 1.2%. Or something like that. So I had that one as well. Wasn't quite as hot on that one as I have been on, on the pale, the number one that they put out, First Draft, I think that one was called. And actually, this one, I quite like this one. It feels like a West Coast beer. It's just a little thin, let's say.
Yeah. It certainly smells the part.
Mm.
It looked the part, and it smells the part. It's got like that, amberish colour. It smells like, getting a bit of caramel, a bit of orange peel. It smells delightful. Really in love with the smell. So, let's see how it tastes.
Will you come in with your first thoughts?
I like that.
Hmm.
I don't know. It's I see what you mean about the thinness. It hasn't got like a robust body, but West Coast IPAs, I'd say quite a few of them probably like 6% around that. Mm. So they're pretty robust, but I don't know. I think this has enough flavour to make up for that.
Yeah.
Getting like. What is that? Is that? It tastes like maybe even coriander.
So, there is a little bit of
like
that
very
in there.
Herbally notes.
It is a really herbally note. And I can't quite pick up whether it's a bit more sort of peppery in sort of what it's trying to give you. But for me, I like this. I like it. I like the initial flavor. I like kind of where it goes. I do find starting it, it disappears as I'm drinking it. But you do get that bit of slight acridity kind of right towards the back end.
It's bitter. That's nice. Yeah. I like that bitterness because that's what that's what I go to the West Coast IPA for. It's like it's got that fruit at the start and it's like, but it's really got that bitterness right at the end. And it doesn't have that like kind of metallic bitterness that some alcohol free beers have. And yeah, I like the fact that it's just sticking to those, to those bitter notes. And it's just, that is the main aftertaste.
Yeah.
I like this. I think, I'm not missing that, the body as much in this. And I think that is due to that bitterness just being, so robust.
Yeah, it's very pronounced. As you get those initial flavors, and then it sort of kicks in and it stays as well. It's not a dry beer, but it's not particularly kind of wet beer either. But it does that bitterness sticks around, quite nicely. And I think I miss the slight robustness of this less than I did with the number two with the stout. even though that was still a nice flavour, that was still a good beer. And it wasn't thin, but it was what you expect, I suppose, of a lower percentage stout. It maybe had a little bit more body, actually, than some of the lower percentage, 4% sort of stouts that we've had sort of in the past. But did have a little bit of a lack of kind of body on the stout. While we're talking about the other beers, I just mentioned the Radler was mouth-puckering, let's say. It's all right. It's okay. It would have been lovely on a, in the middle of a hot summer's day.
Yeah.
Not on a miserable, cold, January afternoon.
I really like this. And those, herbally notes are just sticking around. This is very good in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. I don't get enough beers from Elusive either. I don't see them over here a huge amount, even in the couple of bottle shops that are here. Berkshire, I think they said on the back of the can.
Oh, Berkshire.
Berkshire.
Okay, somebody else.
Did they say that? Yeah, Berkshire. They did. Yeah, Berkshire. I don't know where. Elusive.
Yeah, and I think that bitterness just typing. Like a lot of alcohol-free beers, you're not looking to just keep sipping on it and necking it. It's like this will just go nicely across the hour or however long we're going to record, just nursing it over time. Because you're not continually trying to look for flavor because you're still getting that bitterness and maybe just a little bit like bergamot, orange, at the start, still got subtle notes of that on my tongue. It's very nice.
Yeah.
I think it's very good.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Good. Elusive in somewhere called Finch Hampstead, which is near... it's a Reading postcode, but it's not quite Reading. It's south of Reading. But they're right opposite Siren Craft Beer as well, on the same trading estate.
Okay. Yeah. Around those ends. Yes. Interesting.
Yes. I think we did drink a reasonable amount of Elusive kind of as the podcast, through the first few years, because they do a lot of kind of video gamey style art and kind of naming conventions and things for their beer. I don't know if they still do. I might have a quick look at their online shop and see if there's some beers that I could get in the next few weeks, ready for launching back into drinking some more alcoholic craft beers. But let's move on from these, and we'll enjoy them, and we'll return back to them later to talk a little bit more.
Oh, did I tell you? I had some of that Guinness 0%.
Oh yeah,
beer. It was disgusting. It tasted like vomit. it had a vomity smell and a vomity taste. And I'm not sure, because I haven't had Guinness in a can for a while,
okay,
if that is just how Guinness tastes. I don't know.
From a can.
Because I like Guinness on tap,
yep,
but in a can,
yep,
I haven't had it in a long while. So
I've not had it for a while.
Guinness taste.
Yeah, and I tend to not buy the whatever they are now in the 440 ml cans that you buy in the multi-packs in the supermarket. I tend to buy the kind of the Guinness 330 ml cans that you get in the World Foods aisle that's been brewed,
right,
to ship,
yeah,
over,
yeah,
to fucking,
yeah,
Africa, because they sell a load, yeah, of it over there. That's, mm-hmm, the Guinness that I generally sort of buy, which is nicer. It's a bit more bitter, mm-hmm, but it's still sort of smooth. But I think it's kind of one where the alcohol...
Don't they have a factory in Africa now?
They probably do.
In like,
I wonder,
Nigeria.
Maybe it's imported here from there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's
to
a
be fair.
Terrible carbon footprint for Guinness, then.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be like, forget this Brexit red tape.
Exactly. Exactly. We ship people there, they ship beer, Guinness back to us. That's the thing, that's the way, yeah, that it works. Good. No, I
know they're the biggest consumers of Guinness now. Like,
are they?
In Africa, but yeah.
Okay.
Really?
Yes. They love it. So,
I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm going to have to Google that.
Guinness have had a bit of a drop, haven't they, recently? And it's not been going out, they've not been brewing as much. So it's not been going out to as many bars and pubs and stuff. And I know that that's had a big impact on other people that brew stouts. So the pub around the corner, which normally has Guinness on, had, I can't remember what it was, someone else with their sort of with their stout offering, which to me seems great that it's not just, you know, every pub has Guinness in. Getting to a point where actually they haven't been able to fulfill their orders, so actually people are going to other brewers for their stouts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a good, almost, I suppose, not necessarily for Guinness, but a good moment for a bit of a resurgence for other breweries and their sort of stout offerings as well. Cool.
Sorry, Nigeria are after the UK in biggest consumers, okay, but they've eclipsed Ireland.
Ireland's very small. Ireland's not a huge population, is it?
Yeah,
so.
I mean, Nigeria is probably like probably 10 times the size of Ireland.
Probably,
or something, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have I've got Guinness Nigeria. Interesting. Yeah, so I'm going to be looking around that website. For
nice.
A bit. Anyway, continue.
Perfect. Perfect. let's a little bit of beer chat. Let's talk about some games then, for a little bit. And as I understand it, it's maybe only me who's played something this week to talk about. So I'll launch straight into a bit of a chat about Ant Stream Arcade, which I've mentioned a couple of times on previous episodes. But it's a cool little platform that I wanted to experience more with Evelyn, because Ant Stream Arcade is essentially a platform for a bunch of retro games. And they boast on their website, I think, 1,300 titles at the moment, 1,300 games. But it is like PS Plus and Game Pass is, it is like a rotating library of stuff. So stuff comes in and stuff kind of goes out as well. I don't know what the criteria for that is, but just a bit from their website, Ant Stream Arcade is the world's largest fully licensed library of over 1,300 retro games, featuring legendary titles from Atari, Bandai Namco, Taito, LucasArts, SNK, did you say IREM or IREM? I don't know, and more, faithfully optimized for modern play on PC, Mac, mobile, and console. So we've been playing on PS5. We've got two pads now. So I have been taking Evelyn through a bunch of Mega Drive games that I enjoyed as a kid. I'm watching her horror at how terrible they are, and going back to a bunch of arcade games as well. And trying to play as many multiplayer sorts of things as possible. And I'll talk about Evelyn's experience first before I talk about sort of the platform, I suppose. But she she likes it and she hates it, because she wants to play all of these old games, and she's like, oh, let's try Pong, and it was just so shit. Like,
it didn't age well when I was a kid.
No, absolutely, absolutely. How did people play that game? How did anyone hit the ball bouncing around?
Oh, I mean, did you ever play it with the original?
No, I've never played it with the dial.
It was so sensitive.
Right.
That controller, which was like a little plastic thing with a wheel on it.
Yeah.
When you're turning clockwise or counterclockwise. And when I say wheel, I mean like it's just a hunk of plastic that rotates and it is a circle. It's not like it was grooved or like a steering wheel or something where you could like hook a finger on and like drive it. Just a twisting motion.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't quite translate on some of the games to a gamepad. Ultimately, a couple of games we play. I think it's Top Gear 3000, Continental something.
Warfare.
No, it's a racing game. So she's really enjoyed the racing games.
I know. Thinking of like Call of Duty.
She's enjoyed the racing games much more than kind of anything else. And we've tried Gallagher and some of the sort of shoot 'em ups. I think it's Ghost Planes, something like that. Mm-hmm. Continental Circus. There we go. The name just popped up. I haven't tried her on any of the Star Wars games yet because she'll just, you know, want to throw the pad at the screen. But even things like Space Invaders, she's playing these kinds of games and being like, this isn't quite, like, it's either not fast enough or it's not responsive enough for her for her play. And I would feel probably similar, even though, you know, I played through one sort of plain shooting game, you know, a Gallagher sort of similar type game, Afterburner style kind of thing, and it was good, but because it's on console you can just press start and you just get a bunch of new lives and you can just continue kind of going. Right. There's kind of challenge in that sort of sense, which is fine, absolutely fine for sort of, you know, playing this problem, trying a few kind of games out and those sorts of things. But the thing she enjoyed the most was Bubble Bobble, where you're just shooting bubbles at enemies and jumping around. Like, yep, she was like, cool, this is fine. There's two things I can do. Mm-hmm. I can shoot bubbles, and then I can jump at the things that's in the bubble. Great. We're playing multiplayer, so we're both on the same screen, both jumping around. So, yeah, that was the thing that she really enjoyed the most out of kind of everything. And I can see the simplicity of it. The same as Pac-Man. Pac-Man's been the one that, you know, if something she's going to play by herself, that's the one that she kind of wants to play by herself. Because again, just the simplicity of it. There's not much you can kind of get wrong in it. You know, obviously run into sort of the ghosts and stuff, but it's very simple to control. Same as Bubble Bobble. Very simple to control. And I think that comes across in a couple of the other games, things like The Lion King, which was notoriously difficult when it came out on, you know, on consoles and Mega Drive, on SNES. She tried that and instantly was like, no, don't like this. Don't want to do this.
I completed that so many times, but that's just, you know, persistence of youth.
Same as Aladdin, probably. Right?
Well, and spoiled for choice, right? Yeah. Like, in that what are you going to do? Not play a game?
Yes. Exactly. The magic carpet level on Aladdin was so fucking hard.
Oh, fuck. I remember that one.
But, we've tried a few of these kind of games. And she does gravitate back towards sort of Pac-Man and Bubble Bobble when we're playing. I think there's a game that she really wanted to play called Kentucky Derby, which is like a horse racing game. But basically, it's you're throwing a sack into a hole. And depending on how far the hole is up the table, that's how fast your horse runs. And that's how you race the horses, basically. And so you've got this thing moving across the screen, and you've got this hand, and you control the strength that it throws at. And she kept trying to do it, and the ball was just not going on the table kind of thing. So that one took a little bit, simple controls, but took a little bit of kind of getting used to. And I'm like, let's turn this off now. She's like, no, I'm like halfway through a race, and we've been there for like 5 minutes just watching her fail at this thing. It's so slow. It's like the slowest experience you could probably ever have in an arcade. But I'm enjoying this kind of for myself a little bit as well, because it's not just the library of kind of games. they do a bunch of like community challenges. They highlight games and all of that sort of stuff. So you can kind of jump in, and I don't know how some of these scores are set, but they'll do like Pac-Man, right? And someone set a score at 20,000 points, and you can go on and have your attempt at trying to beat their score. And you get points, you get coins and things like that. You have to pay coins to do some of these challenges. So I could do it once for free, and then if I wanted to have another go, I'd have to pay some coins to be able to do it. But it's quite generous in the amount of coins that you kind of get. You get some for logging on, you get some for playing specific games, you get some for doing certain achievements and things like that. So it's quite liberal in terms of kind of what you're getting. And I'm nowhere near having tried a bunch of these different challenges and things in games. You know, Metal Slug X and things like that, which I've done a few little challenges and things like that in. It's kind of nice to go back and be like, cool, let's see, actually, I played this on the Mega Drive when I was a kid, or I know I played this in the arcade. Was it any good? Okay, yeah, fine, I get the gist of it, it's cool. Was I any good? No. No, I was not. I'm still not very good at it now. And I can't beat the score of 3 that this person got on this game. I've died instantly, sort of thing. So it's a nice kind of nostalgic trip, you know, right back into sort of gaming history. And it ties in, because I got Mike Diver's console book for Christmas as well, which basically he just charts the last 50 years of consoles, ultimately picking up and writing about every single console that has existed. So there's tons of stuff in there that I've never heard of. But just sort of reading through the first chapter on essentially sort of the, you know, how consoles were invented and stuff like that, it's kind of not necessarily pushed me to play this a little bit more, but it's just a nice kind of tie between the two sorts of things, and being like, cool, I'm currently reading about the Amiga, let's play some Amiga games and just see what those experiences were kind of like. Similar to how I sort of experienced Johnny Garrett's Year in Beer book as well. Like, cool, it's October. I'll read the October chapter and I'll find a couple of beers that he's sort of talking about. It's a nice sort of experience to have side by side, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's how I read Year in Beer as well. And I come back to it like every few years. I remember when AntStream launched. And well, I was sent a code for it, and I was like, yeah, this is really cool. This is, you know, there's something here. And it was like, I don't know if it has the legs, though. So it's really cool to see that it's still around at this point. And it's just like, clearly a service that, you know, people are. Is it a one time purchase? Or I know.
It's a subscription. It's a subscription model. Yeah, yeah. Yes. And I think you buy you can buy like a lifetime subscription.
Yeah.
So you can pay sort of one off. Then I think it's like £30 a year, something like that, maybe. Maybe a lifetime purchase is a few years cost.
Yeah. It's still kicking around, because I was like, yeah, this is really cool. And yeah, I was the same. I was like, flitted around a few games, but then I just ended up playing Burger Time every single time. Just like, why play anything else?
We haven't tried Burger Time.
I doubt Tetris is on this, but has Evelyn ever played Tetris?
She hasn't played Tetris, but she's played some more modern, like, rip-offs of it on her tablet. Kind of thing,
right?
You know, similar kinds.
Get her on Tetris, man. Yeah.
I don't know whether
she can beat
that's
the world
here.
Record. She's got time on her hands. How old was that kid? He was like 11.
To be fair, yes, yeah.
She can do it.
Let's see if I can get her on Tetris Connect or something like that first, just so she can be like, "Oh, look at all of these colors." Then take her back to the original. She's like, "What the fuck is this? Where are all the colors? Where's all the music? What's going on?"
Well. You know, if she wants to get into games, just play the best game ever made, and you know, she'll be fine there on it.
Well, it's funny because I, you know, I'm trying to sort of be like, oh, you know, she likes The Lion King. Let's see if she'll enjoy The Lion King game. And I think it was just too head bashing for her. And just like, no, you know, the IP itself is not just going to get me through this experience. I can go and just play something similar, which plays much better, that I've got no idea. You know, it's My Little Pony one instead. And I'll just play that on my tablet. So it's interesting that, I suppose, again, as you mentioned, Adam, when we were kids, we didn't have much choice. We had a game bought for us for a birthday or for Christmas, and that's what we had for 6 months until we went down to the second-hand shop and traded it in for something cheaper that we hadn't sort of played before. So
and like, multimedia was very novel at that point. Now everything is a comic, a film, an interactive experience, a game, an escape room. You didn't have that back then. It was like, oh, they're making a game, they're making a Lego of this and that. It's like, now it's just like commonplace. So yeah, I think I did go back to them from one of the Disney collections that they did, and yeah, it's something where it's like, oh, this is like muscle memory to me, but even so, it's still like, oh, I died, a bit frustrating. So for someone who's A, not very adept at games because they're a child and didn't have those same, you know, frustrations as we did, why bother?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just watch a YouTube.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's kind of, I can't remember, I think when I was about 8, 9, or 10 when I got a Mega Drive. So I was her age now when I started playing, you know, these sort of more simple games like Sonic, FIFA Italia 90, Hang On, stuff like that, you know, where it's, you know, you have the time to be able to put into understanding how the game plays. And some of them are very simple to understand and are very quick to kind of pick up. But you have the time to put into it. And I think you're right, Lucy, in, you know, like, if you want to play Sonic, that's it. That's all you had. You had one game. That's all that existed at the time. So that is what you played. Unlike now, if you want to experience Sonic, there's been multiple cartoons, there's been multiple comics, there's now multiple films, there's multiple games of varying different... Yeah, exactly. And all of the games have different...
DeviantArt, yeah. Experience it all if you want to.
Every facet of Sonic culture.
Yeah.
Just get right into it. I'll try and keep it away from
those. Don't have to use your imagination anymore.
Wasn't Sonic simple when it was just him versus Dr. Robotnik? That was all we needed.
Yeah, I enjoyed those, you know, original free games. But Sonic is bad. I am willing to accept that. I really enjoyed it for what it was back then, but just the whole concept of it is, it's not great. It's rubbish. It's like, oh, I've got to go fast, but it's like, yeah, but none of these levels are actually designed to go fast. And it just feels bad if you go fast or if you go slow.
When he run out of steam and you're trying to go around a loop and he's just like, just falls back down.
And it's like, I don't get why people like Sonic. Like now, like, why would you ever want to play something like that? We know better these days. And it's not to hate on Sonic, but it's like kind of trash. And so when the new Sonic game comes out and people are sad, I'm just like, did you expect anything else? We've moved past this. Yeah, you just never had a good flow state like, say, Donkey Kong Country or something like that.
I'd
much rather play even one of those.
I think the one thing that Antrim Arcade doesn't do very well is actually show you the breadth of the library that it's got. When I start it up, it comes up in the top kind of row of games to play are kind of those community challenge ones, which are often a lot more of the popular kind of games to play. And then it jumps down through a couple of different genres of games. You know, I think the first one down is kind of pick up where you left off in these games that you've already played. And then it's sort of, here's racing genre, here's the beat-em-up genre, here is these kinds of genres. I've just, as I'm going through their library of games, they've got The Secret of Monkey Island, the Amiga game, on there. So, like, why wouldn't I go and do that one evening? Great. absolutely go and spend an hour with that, if not more. But
just to hear the opening theme music, I'd put it on every day, just to then act to that.
And there's music. Stuff, stuff from my youth as a kid, California Games, stuff like that I've just never experienced since having a Mega Drive 20, 30 years
more
ago.
Than that.
Fucking hell, jeez. 20-ish? No, yeah, 30-odd years ago. Mm. So it's. I think they could definitely do more to push the breadth and the amount of games they have in their library. Even on just the front page, it's not curated. None of these things are curated incredibly well to try and put stuff towards you. Storefronts, these kinds of services and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more in that department, I think, from it. Rather than just me being like, cool, what does their Blue Sky feed, if they have one, say about what's kind of on their service or what's coming kind of next. But that's kind of Angstrom Arcade from the last couple of weeks experiencing it. Or actually, we played a little bit over Christmas as well. I'd imagine that Evelyn's education will be very limited. We'll still play a bunch of games, but I imagine she'll spend 5 minutes with a lot of them and be like, nah, next, please. Like, all right, cool. Yeah, we'll move on to the next one. Rather than being like, no, you must play this one. This was the height of technology when it released. You have to understand. You have to understand everything stems from this game. She's like, nah, fuck off. Well, yeah, all right, fine. We'll play something fun. Cool. So I think that's probably going to be my experience for the next few weeks of trying to take her through it. But yeah, that's kind of it from me as well. I haven't really played much more other than a bit more kind of plugging away at God of War. And I might have... Oh, let me talk about that for a minute. So I did get PlayStation Remote Play working on the Steam Deck. Like, what game shall I play to try this out? I know, Power Wash Simulator. So I spent an evening playing Power Wash Simulator on the Steam Deck. Like, I could just own this on Steam and play it on the Steam Deck, but I don't
have
it on PlayStation
now,
so I'll play it through the Remote Play service.
I played it through Game Pass in the same way, on my Steam Deck, so, yeah.
I only own it on PC, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's
with the maximal frame rate possible on the Steam Deck.
It's a good game on Steam Deck.
Yeah.
Like, it works well.
It's the only way I could play it and not get motion sick in it as well. So,
do you think that's because of the screen size?
Yeah. It's the only way I can play Indiana Jones as well.
Really?
Yeah, because there's always a head bob in it. And you can't turn that off for some reason. Yeah. I just have to stream things to the smaller screen and then... But okay, I'm getting through it. And I think that's why I haven't gone back to Indiana Jones, even though I very much enjoyed it. It's just that extra, like, kind of barrier where it's like, okay, let me fire it up on the Steam Deck. And I have the thing where it's like I can just do local. I don't even need the the remote play for PlayStation, I guess, because does PlayStation have cloud streaming?
It does, but cloud streaming does not work through Remote Play.
I can't
stream a game on the PS5 and Remote Play it onto the Steam Deck. I don't know. And I don't know whether you could do that on the PlayStation Portal, but you can now stream directly to the PlayStation Portal. So maybe you couldn't do that before. So there was no ability to remote play and stream from your PS5, whereas now you can do that through the portal, because that's then it's been updated to do that, but I can't do that through the workaround program that I've got on the Steam Deck to connect.
Okay.
I also currently can only remote play over my Wi-Fi network, so I would have to go in and do another couple of steps to log in to be able to say take it away with me to then be able to remote play over it from another network to connect in to through the power of the internet to my home to connect into the PS5. I haven't tried that yet.
Because there was just this there was this app on Steam that you could just buy, and it's like did local streaming. from your Xbox.
Mm.
But I think Xbox now offer you the ability just to do that anyway through other things. There's so many things you can do to just even, you know, do it from the cloud or local stream, and it's like, yes, this is what I like, where it's like there's options as to how you can play games and what you play them on, and it's just, yeah, that's one of the at least good things that Microsoft have done in like the last 10 years to the point where it's like, oh, there's a lot of choice of how I can and want to play the games. I'm pretty sure like the Xbox store, if that is still even a thing, is still basically broken on PC, but you know, what are we going to
do? Is it the Windows store? Is it the Xbox store? Is it the Windows store on PC these days?
Who knows? Who knows? It sort of seems all broken because, I mean, Windows 11 is just a train wreck anyway, so. It's probably just even worse now. So I'm glad you got that working. Because I was thinking, I was talking to Francis earlier today about the Switch 2, which looks, you know, it looks sleek, but it doesn't have all my Xbox games and all my PC games on it, so it's like, other than, you know, I'm sure very good software that's coming to it, what's the incentive to get that, other than just playing my Steam Deck?
I suppose the Steam Deck wasn't out when the Switch released, so part of Switch, the appeal of the Switch was being able to have the handheld sort of
powerful handheld,
absolutely,
right? Yeah,
sort of sit there. But I suppose at least there were a couple of games like Breath of the Wild and things like that which were sort of system sellers for people. Not having seen anything really on the Switch 2, is there anything that they've got kind of that might be system seller kind of thing? I know they're talking about backwards compatibility, so you retain your library still exists across.
Yeah, which is really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be the Mario Kart. They're going to, as I was saying earlier, like they're going to pull a reason out of their ass why Mario Kart 9 or 10 or whatever can't run on original Switch, but somehow miraculously only runs on the new Switch, because that will be the system seller. Maybe they'll, you know, I mean, if they're coming out the gates with a Mario Kart, I'm guessing they're just wanting that to sell immediately out the gates. And it will. So,
But there's no big like Mario game. There's no big Mario game coming. There's no Metroid. No,
people don't actually care about a Mario game. They care about Mario Kart.
Mm.
Because people are sick.
Did they say anything like, I can't remember, is it the new Metroid game that has been touted for a few years? Yeah, you think that's going to be cross both of them?
Yeah, it will be. Because those games do not sell. Metroid games do not sell. So they'll want to get as big as a client base as they can to sell that. Whereas they know they're not taking any hit if they just say, oh, Mario Kart is only on the new one. They're just going to sell more of those things. And I don't know. I don't know why or who finds Mario Kart fun. I don't get it.
Hundreds of people.
Yeah. Billions at this point. But seeing as that game's probably sold like 70 million copies. Yeah, it's not fun though. Play a real game.
I think it's where you were talking about it was it last week? Where we sort of mentioned Adele, you sort of mentioned, you know, your
niece and nephew.
Niece and nephew sort of playing it, and that was Lucy, your experience of it being a bit more, or these days, the newer ones being kind of a bit more, they drive themselves almost.
Yes. It's a baby game played by babies. Forza and Gran Turismo like a real game.
That's what we were brought up on.
Crash Team Racing.
There's actually, so one of the games on Anstream Arcade, which we didn't go into because it looks incredibly complicated in terms of the controls, was a Street Fighter kart racer as well. But one where you can like punch and kick and do stuff. So I imagine you're driving along.
I don't know this game.
Let's try and find it.
There's a Street Fighter.
I don't know if it is a Street Fighter actual kart racer, but it does absolutely have Zangief on the Annie Honda racer on like the front of the box. Street Racer. There you go.
I have never seen this game before. This is excellent.
Oh, it's got Frankenstein. Frankenstein's on the front. Who knew?
Oh, wow.
But yeah,
this is when things were cool and people would experiment because there was money just flying around.
Well, there was no rules or like.
Oh no,
extra
I do remember
IP.
This. Oh, you know when it's like, oh my god, I played this and it was sat in the back of my mind from like childhood.
Mm.
I did play at my cousin's house. We did play. Oh my gosh, you've just unlocked a deep, dark memory for me. Because yeah, it's just the like. Oh.
It's from 94. Okay.
I remember playing
one.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent.
There you go. Street Racer.
But do you ever have that when it's like you don't remember something, a game, and then some, I don't know, you come across it and it's like, oh so, my god, I forgot I played.
Absolutely, that. Absolutely. And this is what Anstream Arcade has done several times. Like I spent half an hour playing Chaos Engine. I'm like, what's Chaos Engine? This looks really familiar. Yeah. And I played through. I'm like, I had this. I don't know why I had this. This is not an appropriate game for children. But I did, and I'm playing it now, and it's fine. So yeah, the Anstream Arcade is definitely bringing some of that to sort of, you know, unlocking a few of those kinds of memories and be like, oh, it's a two-player game. Maybe I played it with my brother. I definitely played it with my brother. Yes, this is. We probably spent a weekend with it before being like, no, rubbish, take it back to the shop and get another second-hand game instead.
That's made me happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just remembering that.
And I remember, another one that I saw pop up, is probably a name I know, but Zool. I think it's more from
Zool.
Yeah, more from Ghostbusters, but there's a, I can't remember, it's like a branded game. You remember when all those like random brands would just have a side-scrolling kind of game? Zool is one of them, and it's so trash in terms of its controls. Like, I remember this. Yeah. I don't remember it being this bad. But then it just unlocked a bunch of, like, other mascot-y type games of this, like, Cool Spot and all of those sorts of things. I'm like, oh
Cool Spot was great.
I must have played so many of these. Just,
we rented
like,
that so many times.
Yeah, yeah.
Blockbuster Video.
It's absolutely. There's definitely that, not just the nostalgia hit, but the memory of it as well that this definitely brings up.
Yeah.
Good. Absolutely.
Could I talk about a modern game with
yes
a very old inspiration?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I just played a demo today. And it is a typing game.
Okay.
Nice.
Bingo cards. Yeah. Took typing off. is it pixel art? it's basically like House of the Dead, but it's set in. I'm trying to find the name of. But instead of like a on rail shooter, it's called Blood Typers. That's a great name.
That's a great name.
Instead of on rail shooter like, House of the Dead and Typing of the Dead was. This is like a survival horror game, like in the vein of like Resident Evil, where you're actually like typing to like move the character around. It's like, to move the character like this way or that way, you have to type, you know, just words that you see on the ground in that direction. So the only like real control that you have outside of the keyboard while typing is just looking in different directions. But yeah, it's I could see... I don't know if you'd want to play an entire game like that, because, like, survival horror, known to be, like, kind of punishing.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have that and, like, already, like, slow, methodical gameplay on top of an even slower kind of mechanic of just typing and stuff like that. I could see how it'd be, like, maybe methodical, but on the other side, like, maybe a bit too laborious and, you know... But it was good. I played about 15 minutes worth, but I like the creativity of it potentially more than, you know, the actual what the finished product would be. But I like the fact that it's like, yes, let's make more weird typing games on different genres. But yeah, it was fun just being like, oh, okay, how do I get to this door? Am I going to need a certain key? And just like. Everything is just like typing based, and you're putting that as like an extra layer over the survival horror element. And it's like, yeah, this could be cool. I may, you know, may not actually pick up the full thing because it may seem like it may be a bit too frustrating and slow. But I like what it's doing. I did enjoy my time with it. I did play it until I died. It wasn't one of those where it's like, yeah, I see the idea. Just close it down. It kept me interested enough where it was like, yeah, I'll keep playing this for.
Yeah, does the survival horror element add any sort of?
That's tension.
Yeah, but does it add any sort of you know, a bit of tension? But do you feel the need to sort of speed up your typing? Does it add any kind of level of? Not necessarily horror or urgency. There you go, that's the word.
Yeah, urgency. It does, because it's sort of like Crypt Master. Things are attacking you in like real time. It isn't like turn-based or anything like that. So it's very much, oh, I've gone into a room or a door, and it's like there are enemies, and they were flying at me. I mean, there was some point where it was just like a horde coming at you, and I could be like, see, like, what? Okay, I need to heal, but there's no quick way to heal because I have to type out the bloody thing. Yeah, you know I mean, so I don't know. Maybe play it on an easier difficulty because I played it on normal. But there is like, oh Christ! I just walked into a room. I didn't know what was going to be in there, and now there's like two zombies on me. So you know, need to. You know, either move over to another place in the room and or like just start spamming that keyboard and typing as fast as I can. So, so there is that kind of like, ooh, what's the best move here? Either just leave stuff and run away or engage in combat. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really curious to see how the full game turns out. It's going to be out at some point this year.
I was going to say, yeah. Is it? You played a demo, but is it kind of? Is it one of those that they'll put in early access, or is it just a game that will come out?
No, it says planned release date 20th of February. So soon, around the corner.
Nice.
Yeah, I really want to see what people think of the end product. But yeah, it's just really cool mixing of genres that I like to see. I like to see these typing games, man. Keep them coming.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, good. Okay. Let's finish there for the evening, then. Return back to our beers. Adil, I think I haven't seen you sipping a huge amount. Have you still got a reasonable amount there?
Okay.
I topped it up, but yes, I'm thirsty.
Fair.
It's been bubblegum.
It's not bad, right? The aftertaste, the finish is actually fine, although now that I got used to the sour bitterness,
mm-hmm.
I'm feeling more of the sweetness lingering, but luckily the rubbery is also faded away. I actually think that might be why I've been sipping a little more, just because it's a little sweet, and that up until it's like been a long finish, that's been covered up, so I think I've just been kind of hiding it, but not in a terrible way, I just didn't feel like having a sweet, just like a aggressively sweet finish, but like I said, more of an experiment. And I know how much Lucy loves blue beers. It's, yeah, I will have this again. But also, I'm fine with Iron Brew. I don't think it's the bee's knees. I like it, but it's not like I would, you know, I live in the north. I could easily get it regularly.
Mm.
The bubblegum is masking. So I think the Iron Brew from Vault City doesn't taste like Iron Brew, but tastes fine as well.
Right.
Bubblegum it feels like it's ducking and weaving around the Iron Brew.
Mm.
It's like melded fine, but like I'm not getting the hits of what I know their version of Iron Brew is. I'm not getting that taste through that much.
Okay.
I really like that even though the cream is a too sour, there's just enough tartness to like bind everything together. But like I said, mostly it's like that initial like third. Every sip was followed by that like rubbery, bad, old, stale bubblegum lingering mouthfeel and taste.
Mm.
And that's like, there's a reason why when I was in middle school, I went to the convenience store and bought real gum. Right? Like, that's a Halloween candy exception type of taste.
Yeah.
So, but again, if this is like the type of thing you enjoy, you will enjoy this.
Mm-hmm. And it's not.
Yep, fair. Lucy, any final thoughts on the Wiper and True?
No, I think I pretty much said everything that I wanted to say. I'm really enjoying this. Just does enough. I don't know. Maybe my taste buds are skewed because I haven't drank a lot this month. But even so, like compared to the other alcohol-free drinks that I've drank, they're definitely getting better on. As an average, on the whole,
yeah,
and I think what's testament to that is that I just really haven't missed drinking this month as much. Mm. But maybe in previous years I may have because I just wasn't getting those flavors, that satisfaction. But this month is different, where it's just like I'm happy with a lot of these alcohol-free beers. So
yeah,
I think across the board they're just getting way better,
definitely. And I think it's only been, you know, Sunday Saturday afternoon and I put the football on, I'm like, oh, I could have a beer right now, and I'm making dinner or doing something else and the football's on, I could have a beer. I'm like, actually an alcohol free beer is giving me that taste.
Yeah.
It's giving me that sort of satiation that I want from this. Fair. So I don't need to reach for a, you know, something that I would enjoy, like a double IPA. I wouldn't be drinking that kind of anyway on a Sunday afternoon. I'd be having probably like a 4.5% pale or a 5% sort of IPA or something a little bit lighter. So yeah, I agree. I haven't missed it really at all. Good. Perfect. So dear listener, if you're doing a dry Jan or a low Jan or just drinking normally through January, let us know.
Damp Jan.
Damp Jan. Moist Jan. I think I knew her. So get a hold of us.
Wait, did you say Jam or Jan?
Jan.
Sure, Jan.
You can go to outoflives.net to look at all the other articles that go up to, if you're listening to us on podcast, on your podcast service of choice, you can go there and look at our faces and look at the beers that we've been drinking as well. You can go to our YouTube, our Outoflives YouTube page, look at lots of our old episodes, look at Addle's, not short-lived, because they're short-lived, but it wasn't a short-lived first looks sort of series, where a couple of years ago he was looking at lots of different games, giving sort of the first hour's impression of a few games. There's loads of stuff over there to look at as well. And we're now as Out of Lives over on Blue Sky as well, so you can find us there. I'm Nova 47 there now, and I've finally deleted my Twitter Nova_47 account. So as I randomly was searching earlier for on Out of Lives for Civilization, what we'd covered previously, there's a bunch of the, when I became a dad 8 odd years ago, I did a bunch of kind of blog posts that pulled from Twitter tweets that I had put out. Those articles are, everything just says cannot find, cannot find, cannot find, because I've just deleted it now, and I realized, like, oh, there's things that reference that now don't make any sense. Right. Oh well, no one's going back to look at things I wrote 8 years ago. So,
the internet has dredged up weirder stuff from.
Well, so but the thing is, the modern so the internet used to be a permanent record of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because. It took so little to run things that, like, even message board stuff just sort of limped on.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember growing up and, like, having friends very involved with the Something Awful boards. And when that closed down a few years back, I don't want to know how many years back, it's fine, I was like, oh, shit, right. This notion of permanence is... But, like, with social media taking over, that's not even there anymore. And especially with, like, video content taking over from text.
Yeah.
Like, we no longer have a permanent record of things because, like, that stuff costs money to store, and also it's just not, it's not indexable in the same way, so you can't refine stuff. It's like, oh yeah, the internet is in a real weird place. Not only is it real shitty, but it's also, like, the good stuff is getting crowded out and probably won't be findable again because it'll be gone.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as whether it's websites that are just closed down, there was a bunch of, you know, it's kind of one of those where if you're a writer, if you're a journalist, I know this has happened in sort of gaming spaces for a few websites that have closed down. It's like, back up all of your work, because you might publish something somewhere and a year later it might be gone because that website doesn't exist anymore and hasn't been archived anywhere.
But they've but because of, like, a huge mass layoff, like a couple of these sites that, like, got bought out in the mass layoffs, they deleted all the content of the people who have quit.
Yeah. Like Game Informer, that was just
was the one that
disgusting. Vice did, like, it as well, didn't they, with Waypoint? I think they got rid of a bunch of the old sort of stuff that was on there.
But they had time to do it. Game Informer was,
like,
it was overnight, wasn't it? Like,
Just, you think of it, what a legacy that magazine and company had, and, you know, what, 30 years, and it's just so disrespectful. It's even disrespectful to the staff that they had, where it's like they couldn't even save some of their work to be just like, we need new jobs, here's some of my portfolio, and just, you can't even give them the grace period of, like, 12 hours.
Or just, like,
it was really...
Yeah,
that hurt me last year. That was, like, one of the saddest that I've ever seen. Just gross. Yeah.
Yes. So
it's GameStop, then.
Yeah. Again, probably GameStop seems to be a permanent feature, but surrounded by impermanence and just destruction.
Oh, they'll be gone. I don't understand why they're still clinging on. I'd surprised that they're still around. The Game Informer thing wasn't surprising. We all knew it was coming, but
they've done it for years. Sudden
nature of it was just really disappointing.
They've done it for years, and I know, like, over here, kind of Game bought out, like, Electronics Boutique at some point, so suddenly you just had one less sort of shop that was in sort of the kind of the gaming and technology sort of space. And then Game is now turned into kind of arcades or VR experience spaces and merch shops rather than kind of gaming shops and those sorts of things. So it's a weird, even in that sort of sense, not just kind of gaming and the internet and what is permanent kind of here for stuff, but actually physically with a move to sort of digital. We have talked again about our libraries and actually how that's not necessarily a permanent thing, and Steam had changed their terms of services to essentially say you're kind of renting these sorts of things now rather than having actual ownership of any of them. It's fucked. No one owns anything
Games
anymore.
It's a weird one. Yeah, I'm surprised it's still around because that's owned by Mike Ashley. Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's the Frasers Group. Yeah. So.
Oh, well. Come and talk to us. Yeah, come and talk to us, everybody, about your about games, about beers, about whatever you like, really. We've got the Discord. You can come and join the Outlaws Discord as well. Adil, you are on the internet in a variety of places. Where are you?
Oh, I am Blue Sky, Fred's, Instagram, Gmail. basically, just look for at the Omniarch. Where, oh, I don't want to say at the Omniarch because the at's the one place I'm not at.
Yeah.
I'm not on
yeah.
The website normally known as Useful.
Yeah. I need to delete my Twitter.
I got a script I could send you that will delete all the tweets too, so they can't continue to scrape and use the data,
yes.
Let alone the
yes.
I
was going to do the Tanked Up. I was going to do the Tanked Up Twitter account as well, but I can't remember the password, so it won't let me log in. I'm logged in. It's just I can't delete it because it gets through. He says, "Put your password." I'm like, I don't know it, and I haven't.
Can you
got
check on your if you're logged in? Can't you see what email address is pointed at? And then do a forgot your password.
I could do that. Yes, I could absolutely do that.
I think it's back at our Gmail that we never.
I think so. Yes, I think.
Oh, and you know the one we just told the listeners to email at us.
Yeah, we haven't given out the tankedupcast@gmail.com. We haven't given that out for years, probably. It's probably got a ton of different codes sent to it because it occasionally gets codes sent to it as well for a variety of games and stuff. So
it's just one person just asking us a question, like, yeah. "Have you played Street Racer?" Today,
should go and have a look. I do keep signing it up for different beer or different brewery sort of newsletters and things like that as well, just as somewhere for stuff to kind of go. But yeah, I probably haven't looked at it properly because I've gone, "Oh yeah, okay, Verdant Brew York, blah 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 blah." I'm sure, fine, cool. Maybe I should, just in case. Right, yeah, let's go now. That's enough rambling and signing off and being on or not on the internet. Get us in all the normal places. Thank you very much for joining us this week. We've been Tanked Up. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
www.outoflives.net